Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo and welcome to your match preview of Bournemouth away. The one game where I couldn't get a ticket just as we start Notorious PIE. I was livid. So I'm making the most of it. I'm having a leaving do. I'm not leaving the pod, by the way. That's my flat. Don't worry, guys. I'm not going anywhere. You don't have to worry about that. It is myself. It is Dan. Dan has just had an international break. I've had an international break. Hasn't been a break, though, because I've been moving, as I touched on in the previous 17 million pods. Dan is also moving, so it is also not a break for him. So we've both been very stressed, sorting out our lives, but we're ready and raring to go for the return of the Premier League and 8 o'clock kickoff at the Vitality. But before we get into talking about anything to do with the game, I've just had an idea, Dan, as we had a little break while we recorded our previous pub. I thought, let's get a coffee, let's just figure out some brain teasers, right? Do you think when Bournemouth came to the Premier League, that was the end of the Barclaysman era?
Nah.
You don't think it... When was the end of it?
I feel like the end of the Barclays era is... Well, when did the sponsorship of Barclays actually end? Was it literally...
2016.
Okay, so they were at least in the Premier League for one season before it happened.
But then it feels like it was the beginning of the inevitable downfall.
But I don't know. There's a bit of like... There's a bit of Barclays men about Matt Ritchie and, you know, Callum Wilson scoring a couple of goals.
Oh, that's true. They're the modern day.
In the first Eddie, you know.
Modern day Buckingham.
Yeah. But they're not like the stars of that era, but they are at least part of it. So, and I'm not a big fan of people having a real go at Bournemouth. Like, oh, you know, they're not really a Premier League team. They are a Premier League team. It's just Leeds' fault that they aren't well run. So, like, Bournemouth deserve to be in a Premier League more than Leeds because they're in the Premier League. You know, I the snobbery around Bournemouth being in the Premier League, I've never quite understood.
I mean, it's not a snobbery for me, but it's like they're not very Barclays. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you think about the great sides, you think about
they're not a Blackburn, they're not Bolton, you know, they're not then yeah, they're not Charlton. You know, they're not obviously not prime Barclays. They're late era Sports Direct All Must Go era Barclays.
I mean, but you do get a bit annoyed about Brentford and Brighton trying to muscle their way into the Barclays, right? That's when you do go, hang on, mate.
Oh, no, they are not part of the Barclays, no.
There you go. So shove that up your ass, Brentford and Brighton. Yeah, I'm sticking the V's up, but you can't see it. Anyway, we'll move swiftly on into the game where we'll talk about Bournemouth away, which is never a fun trip for Chelsea, if we're going to be very, very honest. It's a very tough one. Myself and Dan are here, as we said, right at the top of the show, to give you everything you need to know about this fixture in the Premier League. The 8 o'clock kickoff at the Vitality. But if you are new around here, before we do get into the pod, please do make sure you give us a cheeky 5-star review, if you're new, especially. Or, if you're not new and you have given us a 5-star review, do it. Otherwise, Dan's going to kneecap you. But aside from that, we'll move straight into it. Dan, how are you feeling about Bournemouth away? Because as I said, it's not exactly a happy stomping ground for Chelsea.
No, I was actually quite surprised that the recent form is actually a little bit better than I anticipated. It ain't great. Like, it isn't Palace level of good record. But we have won there in our last two visits, which I didn't think. I completely forgot that we won there in May of 23.
To keep us up.
Yeah, to keep us up. Yeah, that was literally the game that kept us up. Conor Gallagher header, Benoit Badia shield, when Joao Felix scoring, you know, that was late time 22-23 when the season was basically done already. But yeah, it hasn't been a good place for Chelsea. I think, you know, Bournemouth in a variety of ways, especially this version of Bournemouth, I think are very commendable. I think they had a very good season last year. Areola, I think, has done a really, really good
job
there.
Chin.
That chin would kneecap you if you don't give it 5 stars.
Sorry, I cut you off when you were being very serious journalisty and I just chose to be me. Please continue.
But here we go. The crimson part of Areola, yeah, has made a very commendable and I think very effective Premier League team. Watching them this season, they've only won one game, but obviously that was a dramatic comeback at Everton. But it was kind of, you know, it's kind of gone under the radar that they probably should have got the 3 points against Newcastle if it wasn't for some very poor officiating once again. You know, from the PGMOL. And looking at the way they've played so far this season, respectable results, and even losing Dominic Solanke, they spent quite a bit of money to bring in Evan Nilsson, obviously from Porto, 37 million, which, you know, for Bournemouth is still a substantial amount of money, even with the influx of investment in the Premier League. Sinisterra from Leeds, obviously, I think it could prove to be a decent signing. And of course, they've got Kepa now in goal for Chelsea. Not against Chelsea, but he played obviously against Everton before the international break. So they are a team I could see hurting Chelsea. And I think it comes back to things we've spoken about before in central midfield of Chelsea being done on transition. And I do fear a very smart team. And looking at the way Bournemouth approached a Newcastle game and the way they were able to win the ball high up the pitch and create opportunities, especially for Semenyo, who I think is their best player, does concern me. It does concern me from a tactical point of view.
Yeah, no, it's something where I do think that what they do bring to the table is the unknown, which is what I do like about Bournemouth. And I also hate. That's what makes them Barclays. Spending £37 million on a player from Porto makes them non-Barclays. But to understand the Barclayisms of them, it's the unknown. It's the players which you could just pop up and score a header or, you know, can cause issues. In that game against Everton, by the way.
Tavernier feels very Barclays.
Yeah, Tavernier is, I'd say he is, because his brother's better than him, and that's what it is. So you guys are like the Barclays, or you have a player who wasn't very good, or their brother was better, and they were the Barclays player. So Tavernier is the Barclays man. And we lose off the Barclays. If you like more Barclays, I strongly suggest you go listen to the Cultures pod, because obviously this is all they talk about is just pure Barclays nostalgia. It's fantastic. But with all that being said, I do think that they can cause issues. They show that against Everton. They can fight back. They're a good side. I'd argue that that's going to be game of the season, I reckon. That's absolutely unbelievable what they did there. They've got a bit of bite about them, and they actually, quietly by the end of the season, were going about their business, but they were solid for the vast majority.
They also were very effective, and I think it's something they still have. Again, sorry to keep on bringing it back to classic Barclays, but you know, it's kind of the way I've praised Brentford in recent years. Of they do kind of remind me, and I think Bournemouth are becoming this team as well, of you know, the way Blackburn and Bolton used to be very, very good at the basics, and that meant that when big teams came round, they would be able to undermine them. I think that Bournemouth, because of what they did under Eddie Howe and the way they were kind of described as quite a technical team, a team who liked to pass the ball around, it's not that they still can't do that, but I think they've become a lot more forceful, especially at set pieces. They were very impactful at set pieces last year. They've got a bit of height about them, not only from their centre-backs, but also good deliveries. I think not only from players like Semenya, who are obviously creative and can score, but I think in terms of where I fear Chelsea may be hurt is one of those deliveries coming in from set pieces. So I think corners are going to be potentially a dangerous area as well. So yeah, they're not a spectacular team. I can't see them getting any higher than they did last year, but I think they will get some good results over the course of the season. And I think they just look stable enough that they will do enough to remain in the Premier League for an extended period of time, unless anything goes drastically wrong. But I just think that they look like just a classic stable Premier League team. I don't think there's anything more about them. And for Bournemouth, in Bournemouth's history, that's a very good thing. You know, I think it's very easy to look at these teams and go, all right, they don't have any, you know, spectacular players or players that, you know, you're going week in, week out, these are going to be big players. I mean, maybe Semenyo, maybe Cliver, maybe Tavernier developed to enough of a level where maybe a bigger Premier League team takes a punt on them. But really, you're talking about a team who I just think will be secure, stable. I think Areola has also put in a defensive structure that means they don't really get battered that often. They don't concede a lot. Maybe they'll struggle with Solanke. I mean, Solanke scored 20 goals last year for Bournemouth, which, you know, in context is very impressive. I mean, if, you know, if a Chelsea striker's doing that, they're getting a lot of praise. So I feel that in itself may be a problem further up the pitch, but I do think they will have enough goals. I think they have enough solidity. I think they have enough technical quality. And why it wouldn't be that much of a shock, unfortunately, if Bournemouth did get a result against Chelsea.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I think what Bournemouth brings to the table is, yeah, that shock factor. It's like you said, it's the being good at the basics, being a classic Barclays-esque side. And Solanke had a Barclays-esque season. So, you know, with all that being said, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they do their bits. But before we carry on, instead of us talking about Bournemouth, because obviously we don't know that much because we don't look that low down the table, apparently, because that's what big club fans are supposed to do. We spoke to Back of the Net, the Bournemouth podcast, about everything we need to know about the Cherries. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Opposition preview. Back of the net. Bournemouth podcast is joining us. Not quite of the Barclays vintage we were talking about earlier in the pod, but that's okay. Sam Davis is here to enlighten us on why Bournemouth should be considered Barclays, with some Barclays nominees from the Bournemouth side. I'm sure we'll have some in there because we want to have some nominees we can send off to the Cultures guys later. Sam, how are we doing? We all good?
Very well, very well. Yes, we're not quite Barclays men, but we've had these Barclays-esque moments in the Premier League, not least our last game, which was phenomenal against Everton, to be absolutely dreadful for 86 minutes and then have 9 minutes of wondrous football, no VAR involved, winning 3-2. I know Everton fans in our vlog comments said, you're acting like you won the league. Well, you know what? It was like we won the league because no team turns that around usually, and we did it. So yeah, we were delighted.
It was impressive. It's undoubtedly going to be game of the season for me. I really enjoyed it. Match of the day, I was like, I've got to put my feet up and watch this. So I watched it, watched Jordan Pickford struggle and scream at everybody he could. But yeah, I mean, look, we're not here to talk about Everton. We're here to talk about Bournemouth. And obviously that game, despite how amazing it was, we are playing you 8 o'clock kickoff on Saturday at the Vitality. How are you feeling about it? Because you guys had a pretty solid season last year. I think it was kind of obviously widely celebrated early doors, but then you quietly just went about your business last year, and it was very, very good, wasn't it?
Yeah, Andoni Iriola, I think he had it tough at the start because he was trying to retrain his side to play his way of football. We harshly sacked Gary O'Neill, according to many, but I think the board at AFC Bournemouth just saw that this opportunity to have Iriola became available, so they went for him. And it was a different style of playing football in our I think for the first 8-9 games, he struggled. We got a point against you guys. That was one of the only points we got. Another one at Brentford as well, West Ham at home. But then we lost every other game. So it was a very tricky start for him. But then there was this eureka moment that happened in October where things just clicked for him. And people just understand the way he wants to play football. And it's front foot, it's energetic, it's winning the ball back in the opposition's first third. It's high press, high turnover, high velocity football. And we love it because it's the closest thing to Eddie Howe that we've got down at Dean Court for quite a while now. And it's just really good, entertaining football. And, you know, thankfully points are coming with it as well. And in his first season, he broke a record for us in that we got the most amount of points we have in a Premier League season. So for his first season, it's been promising. And for once, we're not looking over our shoulder. We're actually looking ahead, thinking, actually, how high can we finish? So, yeah, things are very positive under him at the moment.
It's very interesting you say that, because we were talking, obviously, in another pod, actually, because we were talking about the Civil War situation at Chelsea, how football has adapted and changed. And it's very interesting to hear you say that about Bournemouth, because obviously you guys came up, people had you pegged to go straight back down. And with that, you're now saying you're looking forward. And with that, you mentioned it before we started recording on earlier on today. And you talked about Michael B. Jordan and obviously how he's now invested in Bournemouth. Has having somebody like that helped almost with Bournemouth in the way they kind of tackle things mentally? Doesn't feel like little old Bournemouth anymore. It feels like, okay, well, Michael B. Jordan's investing in us. We're Premier League. We're stable. Highest points down. We're looking up. What's the vibe like? How different is it to when you came up the first time with Eddie Howe?
I think this time we've got an owner that's willing to put his money where his mouth is. I mean, don't get me wrong, the previous owner that we got was absolutely brilliant for us. However, there was a limit to his financial capabilities. With the new lot that we've got now, and with the help of the exposure Michael B. Jordan can bring, we can slowly become a sort of global club, which is mad, because you're saying the words global club in a sentence, you're thinking, hang on a sec, I'm going to be sat with what, just 11,000 people on Saturday night at Dean Court, like watching this. Like we are still small, but we've got high ambitions. And what's happening at the moment, our training ground is being rebuilt about 5 miles down the road. It's a brand new facility, multi-million pound thing, that's going to rival like the footprint of, say, Southampton as a sort of nearest rival that is known for bringing through like academy products. We're going to have a training ground that's going to be, you know, sit well in the Premier League, and that will clear space next to our existing stadium, which maybe we can then start to talk about a new ground and having a capacity that, you know, doesn't get laughed at by every single Premier League fan when they come down to Dean Court. But it is positive, and they've got aspirations to make the club more known globally with a kind of Welcome to Wrexham style documentary, and having Michael B. Jordan on board will certainly help that. And having like Tyler Adams, the captain of the US men's national team, in our ranks as well, then yeah, things do bode well. But you know, I do worry, because it only takes one dodgy season and then getting relegated and things can hit the fan very quickly. But at the moment, it's all good and everything sort of really positive in and around the club.
Well, with that, how would you explain the football you're playing? Like you say, it's very high velocity, high intensity. Is it something where if you guys, I mean, look, I think everyone turns around right now and plays Man City and goes, oh, okay, it's Man City, we'll just kind of take the hit. But when you play the other sides further down the league as well, how would you guys say you set up? Are you fairly malleable? Are you sort of a team which you will take it to the other opposition, have be on the front foot? Or will it be a bit more like maybe last year when we played you? I'm going to use Dean Court as well. I've not heard that for years. Right. At Dean Court when we played you, you obviously were very rigid and very compact. Like, what's the sort of thing that I can expect when it comes to watching Bournemouth against Chelsea?
I think you'll see that we'll try to take the game to Chelsea. I think our strength is in our attacking players, really. We've got a great defence, don't get me wrong, and we've spent millions on trying to reinforce that with some amazing young talent, wonder kids of Football Manager, that kind of thing. I hope that's not where they're doing all their research, but we've got Elia Zabani and Dean Howson, who are just a rock at the back, Marcus Senesi doing so well. But the emphasis is on our attacking fullbacks, really, and just seeing them overlap and underlap and trying to get up the pitch as much as possible, creating havoc. We've got a front four. We're a Dominic Solanke-less side now, but in Evan Nilsson, our new sort of Brazilian striker, and Justin Kluivert on one side. You've got Luis Sinisterra, Ryan Christie, Marcus Tavernier. There are a load of players that I can mention that all move around during the game. And Antoine Semenyo, who I haven't mentioned yet, is a key part of that. So if you're a Chelsea defender, you're sort of not really knowing who you're marking because they constantly move around throughout and they just cause absolute havoc. But we won't be as passive as we used to be. That's one thing we were maybe under Eddie Howe a little bit, just try to contain them as much as possible. And, you know, sometimes we played the likes of Manchester City, who I think have been probably the best team in the league for the last like 10 or so years, and we would restrict them to a 1-0. But really, we want to have a go at teams, and if it means losing 3 or 4 nil, then, you know, so be it. We're doing that now, but games are closer. So, you know, I do think there's a real opportunity here to, you know, to take points from a Chelsea side that probably needs time to gel. I'd rather be playing you at home now rather than, say, 3 or 4 months down the line where you know your style and identity a little bit more. But you can expect lots of action. And I think both of our teams seem to be second-half sides at the moment. We're in the Premier League this season. I think Bournemouth and Chelsea are both top for scoring in the second half, albeit all yours came in one game at Wolves. But we've done the same as well by scoring 4 goals in the second half. So I think either way, people at home will have a very entertaining fixture on their hands.
I hope not. I'm very much the mindset. I just want to go there, get the points, and leave. I'm like, I can't do this. The stress at the minute. I was obviously saying to you that I'm not as emotionally invested. I say that in my head, I am. When it comes kickoff, my heart sinks if things don't go right. So it's very much a case of, because I'm just hoping that we can go there and do the business. But that, just hearing those words, almost how confident you are, actually terrifies me, because it makes me realise how low, again, no disrespect to Bournemouth, if we realise how much lower Chelsea have come in expectations of people, because we're sitting here and we're talking about, oh, you know what, I fancy against Chelsea. It's like, that's not what, even 2-3 years ago, no one would be saying that. So, you know, I really hope that we can do the business. But you mentioned Semenyo, you mentioned Evan Nilsson, but I do want to touch on Dominic Solanke. Now, I've been very vocal in the fact that I do feel that you guys have done a really good job of taking the money and running there, because he's had one very, very good season, but the rest of the time he's been remarkably bang average, in my opinion. Is that a statement you'd agree with, or is it very much a case of, no, he's actually been very good for us in certain places doing certain things? Obviously, I'm talking Premier League. He's maybe had one good season. But is it a case of you feel that that was a deal that you guys couldn't turn down and it's actually going to work out for the better? Or do you feel that maybe the loss of Dominic Solanke could actually be a bit of an issue?
I think his loss, just speaking about the few games that we've had without him, I think really it's what it's made is, you know, other players try to step up a little bit more and, you know, take that mantle of having the responsibility of scoring goals. And, you know, Evan Ilson, our striker, he actually came off on about 60 or 70 minutes against Everton. So we were playing the last 20 minutes of the game without a striker and we scored three. So that responsibility is being shared. But Bournemouth fans were worried. We were concerned when he left, because last season, yeah, you're right, he had a brilliant season, 20 goals in all competitions, fantastic. But that was his only real good season in the Premier League. He had a great season in the Championship where he scored 30. I think Mitrovic scored 42 that season when Fulham got promoted, but he had a great season then. But other than that, he's always, like, for Bournemouth at least, he's always really been an understudy, because he joined for quite a price tag for us at the time, 20 million from Liverpool, and he was understudy to Callum Wilson. So there was no sort of real chance for him. When he was playing at Liverpool, there was no way he was going to be breaking into their side. Even in the Carabao Cup, he struggled to make it. But when Callum Wilson moved on from Bournemouth, I think he had to be the main man. And slowly but surely, he turned into the striker that, you know, we all wanted him to be. He's more than a number a number nine. He's a number 10. He works so hard. His hold-up play is really good. He's not explosive with his pace, but he's quick. He's very agile and he knows where the ball is. Where the back of the net is. And he sometimes I think he overthought it in occasions where he's like bearing one-on-one down on the keeper. But now I think he's developed a more natural instinct. And I think we will miss that. We will miss it. But signs are promising with our new striker as well. I certainly wish him all the best of the luck in the world at Spurs. I sense you probably wouldn't. But he's...
I'm not bothered, mate.
But I do think he's going to be a player that, you know, because we're Bournemouth, he got overlooked for England. I swear that when he's fit and when he scores a few goals, he'll be going straight in that England squad. But we wish him all the best. But we're just adjusting to life without him at the moment. But early signs, at least, are positive. But the money that we got for him, I was ultimately well pleased with that. Well pleased.
Oh, yeah, it's money where you can just get it and run. Mm. There's some situations where you just got to go, yeah, thanks, guys. See you later.
Yeah.
But I mean, with that being said, you know, you've mentioned the strengths. You've mentioned how you might miss Callum Wilson. You want to take the game to us. That's fantastic, I guess, in some cases. I mean, we saw against Wolves and we're doing the same thing. We kind of did take advantage of that. As much as that's a strength, is that amongst the weaknesses which you think Chelsea could probably target to try and get a result at the weekend?
Yeah, you know what? It's quite interesting. Even as a side that likes to play football ourselves, we're looking at some teams thinking, oh, you know, they like to play football, so we got a chance against these guys rather than the ones that, you know, park the bus. I don't think either of us do that. So I think it'll be an entertaining game. But I think we've got a harder underbelly this time. I think our defence is a lot more stable and secure than it used to be. That was always our problem. You know, sometimes under Eddie, he would smell blood a little bit and ultimately we would get punished. Sometimes we did park the bus, like I said, but it wouldn't be the most entertaining game and we'd lose it anyway. I feel as though we've got a lot more resilience now. And, you know, it probably is in your best interest for us to play like that, because Chelsea, on paper, have got some really good technical quality that can exploit us. If you compare the two squads, you know, Chelsea should be winning. However, funny things happen under the lights at Dean Court. So we're sensing there could be a little bit of a shot coming in. But I'm looking forward to the game, because either way, the neutral, like I said earlier, they're gonna be in for an entertaining game.
Well, we'll have to see. I'm kind of more looking forward to it now. I always like these opposition previews because it kind of gives me an insight into what I expect from the other side of the fence. Because it's, I like to kind of take it all into consideration, look at the team that way, and then try and understand it. I'm excited to see it. I think after the Everton game as well, your tower's going to be up. So hopefully we can get the business done. But like I said, sounds like it could be an entertaining one. With that being said, you forced me to, and I don't normally do this, but can you give me a score prediction, please?
look, I've on our own preview, I said 3-2 Bournemouth. It's probably more in hope than expectation. I mean, a draw's probably closer to what I'm thinking, but we're probably due a little bit of luck with the way that VAR's gone for us this season and a few other things. I mean, one of our goals against Newcastle should have stood. PGMOL came out afterwards saying, yeah, I don't know what the referee was doing. VAR got it wrong. Well, thanks for the apology, but that doesn't really help us. We'd be joint third if that had gone our way. But I don't know. I feel as though we need a bit of luck. I sense we might just shade it. So I'm going for a 3-2 Bournemouth.
3-2. You stuck with the entertainment.
Sorry.
That's... 3-2. My heart pressure is not going to be enjoying that. I've got my leaving due that day from my building, so all my friends are there, and we've decided to barbecue, and they've gone, we'll slip the football on for you, Lou, and I've gone, great, thanks guys, just I'm really looking forward to that. So this is me like looking at burgers going, this is great, I'm really looking forward to this. Oh dear, we'll have to see. Well, I'm hoping it goes the other way. Maybe 3-2 Chelsea, I might be more happy with that. Good game, but we'll have to see. But anyway, guys, if you have enjoyed this, please make sure you head across to Back of the Net and check out the preview we did over there with them. And I won't lie, I've been looking at these guys for a little while. I'm very, very impressed. They've got fantastic content. So if you want to have a little look at other bits of football, which is entertaining and it actually has a really good feel-good factor to it, these guys are great for it. So make sure you head across and check it out. But guys, I'm going to hand you back over to Dan and me because I'm speaking in third person. And we'll carry on with the pod over there. So I'll see you in a little, like, 30 seconds, maybe less. Maybe 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So, Dan, we've spoken about the Crimson Chin. We've spoken about Bournemouth and their strengths. And obviously, we've listened to some Bournemouth fans tell us exactly what we need to know about Bournemouth and where they feel their strengths lie. Let's talk about Chelsea, mate. Let's go proper Chelsea in this situation. What are you thinking heading into this game? Are you feeling more confident off the back of that Palace game? Or are you feeling less confident? Is there something you wish we could do more of? Like, where's your head at?
I think there is a split at the moment where I am optimistic in terms of our attack. I think that on the right side, Madueke looks like he's in the best form he's been at Chelsea. Obviously, international duty, doing well for England. Cole Palmer seems to be getting the freedom and ability to influence under Maresca so far. I feel like Chelsea will create good opportunities. I feel like they will score goals. You know, I think that they are a team that under Maresca already look productive. And I think we may see Jadon Sancho get a start in this game. Because I feel like the left side of Chelsea's attack is still a massive question mark. I feel like the right side of their attack is very kind of settled at the moment, or at least you know the players you want to be playing there are in form, they're being productive, they're creating the opportunities, and that's where the danger's coming. So there's that side of it. And I think for the first half of Palace, I thought Chelsea were very strong, very dominant. I thought they were playing the sort of football that Maresca probably visualises he wants his Chelsea team to be doing on a regular basis. You know, very much suffocating the opposition, minimising their ability to break on us, and very much getting our wide players 1v1. That's exactly what Leicester did very well in the Championship last year. The problem came in the second half when we didn't start the second half that well from a defensive point of view. You get in the Premier League at times, players like Eze have the ability to curl an effort into the far corner, and you know, because he is a brilliant player, and we gave him far too much space. And then post then, it felt like Chelsea's structure went kind of up in the air. And my fear consistently is to do with us being hit on transition. I saw it in the Palace game, but I've seen it in other games too, where structurally, I just think there is a massive flaw in this team, in a sense that I think gaps continue to open up. And my big fear as we play teams like Bournemouth, we're going to be playing West Ham. Is it next weekend? Yeah, I think it is away from home. London
Stadium. Torres PI will be returning for that.
You know, good. Yeah, it's like the good, I think good transition teams, or good teams who I think have the tools to really hurt Chelsea in that capacity. Teams with speed, with aggression, I think it's set pieces too. That's my big fear. I think at the moment it's very fragile, Chelsea's dominance in games. I think it doesn't take a lot. And to be fair, you could say that was the same for a majority of last season until that very strong late run under Pochettino. So I feel like that's my big concern at the moment. Is just that if a team is able to be more precise, have the right ability and quality, I think Chelsea could be really exploited in transition. So that's my fear. I also think Bournemouth pressed really well in their game against Newcastle. You know, Chelsea, as we know, we're going to be wanting to build up from the back. And we have already seen with Sanchez being suspect with the ball at his feet. Chelsea also being hounded very effectively in their last away game to Wolves. You know, Wolves had a lot of opportunities in that game. And the 5-2 kind of masks a game that could have gone in a very different direction, especially in that first. 6-2. Sorry, Joao Felix. There's my agenda coming out.
No, you're right. You're right.
But yeah, it was a dominant game that was a brilliant second half from Chelsea, no doubts. And Chelsea exploited the chaos of the game in the best capacity. But as we know, that game, even in the second half, even after Chelsea were dominant and were away by, you know, 3 or 4 goals in lead, you know, there were still opportunities for Wolves in that second half. So, yeah, I don't think anyone can seriously tell me that there haven't been stretches in games that have been very concerning for Chelsea. So it's whether Chelsea can stifle that, but I still, it's more central midfield that I just keep on coming back to over and over again, where I'm not sure how Maresca solves it, especially in the players that he wants to use, because I think Enzo Fernandez has had a very poor start to the season on and off the ball. Romeo Lavia's fitness is a massive question. Moises Caicedo, I think, has had some good moments, but also had some quite concerning moments as well. So, yeah, it remains a problematic position that I'm not entirely sure how you solve quickly.
No, I think that's a very fair analysis. I think the midfield is a massive issue in terms of how they manage it. I think that, as you said, that none of them have really stuck out. I think the only person that's really a shoo-in in that midfield, or should be, is Cole Palmer in that number 10 spot. I think aside from that, it's kind of a case of, it's only been a few games. The international break in September always sneaks up on you, because you get into the rhythm with the season, and then all of a sudden, bang, international break, everything comes to a halt. So now we've kind of got another month just to sort of get in the rhythm once again. And for me, I think, look, if Romeo Lavia can stay fit, he's the other shoe-in. And it's just up to the... I think it depends on the game of whether you play Caicedo or you play Enzo Fernandez. I think that probably against Bournemouth, I think we're going to see a side that's going to be sitting back against us a lot. So I'd argue this is maybe a game where you would play Enzo Fernandez. You probably might see the best of him as well, where he can find that pass. And this season, although you say he hasn't been great on and off the ball, he has found a few of those passes which can unlock a team. You know, whether it's a switch to Noni Madueke, whether it's a nice little dink into the box, we know what he's capable of. And I think that that's probably the sort of game where you want to have those kind of players. But it is an issue in terms of finding the balance of that midfield. And I feel like we're going to end up falling into the trap that Manchester United did with Paul Pogba, which is going to be constantly trying to find a player which will unlock the potential in one of these midfielders that we've got, which is a big issue. And what we really need is just one solid person at the base of midfield. You need one person you know is going to be there week in, week out. And we'd like to think it's Romeo Lavia, but he needs to get that fitness up to actually succeed with that. But we'll have to see what happens. I think that this game for me is Chelsea's opportunity, I think, to just get 3 points on the board. We just need to get in a rhythm. I think West Ham's going to be a very, very tough fixture. I don't think we're going to see a lot of positives there. I think we're going to really struggle, because they are looking like they're either going to be really good or they're going to completely fall off a cliff. But whenever I spoke to West Ham fans this week about the Man City game, they said this is the best we've seen West Ham play football in a long time.
They did, you know, sorry, this is now becoming a West Ham preview, but I think that, yeah, they did cause problems. And I just think, yeah, it's a general point. Like, it's the concern I had watching, you know, Bournemouth, specifically in the Newcastle game, is that, you know, it shows the quality across the Premier League, but also just in what I've seen from Maresca's Chelsea so far and the way teams can exploit it and the way teams haven't exploited it. I think Palace actually missed a big opportunity in the second half of that game, because I don't think Chelsea had a stranglehold on possession. I think that Chelsea looked very vulnerable, and I think some of the subs Maresca made weren't that intelligent. I think the fact it took so long for Christopher Nkunku to come on that pitch, I just found very surprising. And of course, I'm more talking about attack than defence there. Nkunku isn't going to solve Chelsea's defensive problems, but in terms of the opportunities being there, and I could see teams looking at game so far for Chelsea and thinking there is at least there's going to be a period because of the quality in Chelsea's team where you have to accept Chelsea are going to dominate the ball and they're going to create opportunities and they have quality in possession with Cole Palmer, Nicholas Jackson, Noni Madueke, yeah, Jadon Sancho to that now, Christopher Nkunku, Enzo Fernandez, as you pointed out, at times can play passes that few players can. You've got to accept that you've got to get through those periods. But I think if you were watching the Palace game from a Bournemouth perspective, you'd look at that and go, well, for 45 minutes, yeah, they were hurt. They struggled a lot to get up the pitch. But then the moment they were able to get up the pitch and create some problems, that chin wasn't that strong for Chelsea. Talk about that chin again. Chelsea's chin wasn't that strong, and it isn't that strong, unfortunately, at the moment. So it's, I think if you're Bournemouth, you're looking, can we get through those periods? And if the game isn't gone by that point, as it was, like for Wolves, right? Like Chelsea were able, because of the quality in finishing, to make the game done. So it didn't really matter how vulnerable defensively they were. The game was done in that second half. If you can stay within touching distance of Chelsea, I think there will be these vulnerable periods that will allow you opportunities. And then, of course, it's about whether you take them or not.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how Chelsea deal with that, because I do worry about ourselves going forward. We've said that several times, you and I as well, when we come to dealing with watching Chelsea over the past 18 months and the lack of a clinical centre-forward. But Nico Jackson, he was a target for Bournemouth. He's now Chelsea centre forward. He scored 17 goals last season. He is a future ballot Barclays Hall of Famer. So we will hope that he can deliver. But let's crack on with the show. And before Dan and I continue to wax lyrical about Nicholas Jackson when we go through the 11s, there's one thing we need to talk about. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Welcome back to football. Because the international break doesn't count. It's the Premier League. And therefore, we've got Stat Shaggers right back for you. And it's Chelsea and it's Bournemouth. 8 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday. Not sure about that on Sky TV. But anyway, from my perspective, it's okay. Chelsea playing Bournemouth for only the 22nd time. Only played them 21 times so far. 1-14, drawn 2, lost 5. So a good record against the Cherries. Having played Bournemouth as little as we have, there are actually two glaringly bad defeats against them within the last 10 years. Those two came in consecutive Januaries, losing 3-0 at Stamford Bridge on the 31st of January 2018 before a harrowing 4-0 loss the following year, which saw a second-half masterclass from Eddie Howe and a brace from Josh King. So two bad defeats there, but we do still have a 67% win rate against Bournemouth, and that, of course, is not to be sniffed at. Neither is the little winning run. Well, unbeaten run, I should really say, that dates back to February 2020, with Chelsea winning 3 and drawing 2 of the last 5 matches against the Cherries. That does, of course, include a 2-1 win last season in the final game of the season when Moises Caicedo scored his incredible goal at Stamford Bridge. On to the manager record. Well, actually, for the first time this season, our manager, Enzo Maresca, has managed against Chelsea's opposition before. He managed Leicester last season against the Cherries in the fifth round of the FA Cup, winning 1-0 at the Vitality Stadium. So we do have something to talk about there. That, of course, does mean he has a 100% winning record against Bournemouth and a 100% winning record at the Vitality Stadium itself. Hopefully, that can continue this week and make it 2-from-2 against Bournemouth and at the Vitality. His opponent, Andoni Iraola, who Louis so aptly christened the Crimson Chin last season, has yet to win against Chelsea, drawing 0-0 and losing 2-1 last season. So hopefully he doesn't make it third time lucky and Louis can continue to laugh at his chin. But it's back to you guys in the studio.
Right, Daniel. Numbers were said. Words were conversed. Conversed? I don't even know if that's the right word to use. Words were used. We'll go with that. Anything that stuck out to you?
Numbers.
Numbers, exactly. This is a Barclays podcast. We don't care about your numbers. Twitter Tactico, pathetic Tomas.
Woke nonsense.
Expect better.
Woke nonsense.
Utter woke nonsense. We don't need that here. But we do, because, you know, it adds a bit of dynamism to the podcast. And we always appreciate Tom giving us the numbers that we need to know. But before we jump into the rest of it, obviously, we're talking about numbers. We're talking about other things around Chelsea, and we need more numbers to people review our podcast. So please make sure you give us a 5-star review. But let's get straight to the... It was an opportunity. I wasn't going to miss it. Let's get straight into the 11. Come on, mate. Talk to me. How are you feeling?
I feel like the big question mark for this 11 is obviously, and we're saying this before Maresca's presser, is the right back position. What's the status of Malo Gusto? What is the status of Reece James, who is now technically back from suspension, but whether he's fit or not is kind of unknown at this point. We haven't really had any major updates on that. I feel the rest of the team, in a sense, at this point, kind of speaks for itself, unless you're getting major shocks. He made it very clear that Robert Sanchez is his Premier League goalkeeper. I feel like Fofana and Colwill will remain the first choice back too, because the Zassi, Badiashile and Tosin didn't absolutely nothing to impress in the two Savet games, so why would you change that? And Cucurella is obviously going to remain as the left back. I feel in central midfield, unless Romeo Lavia is back, Caicedo and Enzo Fernandez probably continue to play, because Dewsbury Hill has done absolutely nothing to impress so far. And then I think there is obviously a conversation about Nkunku here. I'd like to see Nkunku start. So feasibly then, Jadon Sancho probably isn't starting, because it would be Palmer, Nkunku and Madueke probably behind Nicholas Jackson or around him in that attacking area of the pitch. So it, to me, I feel like teams at the moment are a little bit more simpler to predict. I might be wildly proven wrong. Sancho obviously could make a start. He's been at Cobham throughout the international break, so he's probably fit and raring to go at this point, and Maresca has probably seen him up.
That's why I've got on my 11. Yeah, that's the precise reason. I've got him on the left wing in my 11. I've got him on the left. I've got Nonny on the right, and I've got Cole Palmer down the middle behind Jackson, purely because I think Jadon Sancho has been available throughout the international break, and Enzo Maresca has been asked about him a couple of times, and he said, yeah, exactly what we expect from him. He's being really good. I think this would be a good game for him to come in.
Yeah, no, I think the left side of Chelsea's attack is up for grabs, absolutely. It's very uncertain. I mean, I was listening to straight out of Cobham, and they were kind of saying that maybe internally at the club, they're looking at Neto and Sancho. Or actually, Neto now is going to be competing on the right side, even though he started his Chelsea career playing on the left side. So maybe Sancho changes that. But I think that Mudryk is in real trouble. I really do. I think he's got a problem, because I think Neto's a better player. I think Sancho, whatever concerns you have about him, logically being a Chelsea signing, is a better player. So where he's going to get minutes consistently, I'm not entirely sure. Especially if Neto and Sancho start to impress, I think they will quickly, because I think Maresca has lost patience already from Mudryk. I think that's become pretty clear. It's good to have those options, and especially what will become clear in the upcoming weeks is once you get the Carabao Cup, once you get the Conference League starting proper, the concern over where everyone's going to get minutes, I think, will lessen a bit, because naturally, if you're going Thursday to Sunday, you're going to have that rotation. So, and if he's going to sort of look at it as two separate squads, I think it will just be interesting to see who features more in the Conference League at the start, and whether they can progress enough to make it so they get into the Premier League team. So I think until we get to that point, it will still be kind of a conversation of those players maybe validating the reason why they should be in the Premier League team more than the Conference League team. I don't know whether you agree or disagree with that. There will be a rotation. There will be crossover, absolutely, when the schedule gets more intense. But I think at the start of this season, I think there will be two distinct groups.
No, I agree. I think that was one thing which did worry me, was the fact that with the Conference League squad, there was talk of Cole Palmer not being included. And I believe he hasn't been, which I do feel is maybe not a good idea, especially when you come down to the business end of it, where you are playing some solid teams. Of course, people expect Chelsea to deliver in that competition, but, you know, there's always got to be room for safety measures.
The only thing I would say is Cole Palmer, I think what will happen is, if Chelsea do what is expected of them, which is to progress through the league phase, there then is a resubmission of the squad in January or February. So Cole Palmer would then be allowed to come back in to the squad. So this squad that they've just submitted is not the final squad for your whole competition. If you remember when last time we were in the Champions League, there was a lot of discourse after that mad January window of players that had to be left out because we'd had to bring in new signings into our Champions League squad. So it's the same for the Conference League. What I think will happen is, if Chelsea progress properly through this, You'll see Fofana come back. I think you'll see Lavia come back into the squad. I think you'll see Cole Palmer come back into the squad for the rest of the competition.
Well, that makes more sense. We'll have to see. Let's focus on getting out of that league phase first. I know what everyone's saying. It should be expected. We're playing a team from Armenia that was founded 7 years ago. But, you know, just want to play it safe, guys. All right, that's how we want to do it. So, I tell you what then. Let's quickly rattle through the R11 then. So, you've got Robert Sanchez in goal. Left back, we've got Cool. Two centre-halves, we've got Levi Colwill, Wesley Fofana. Right, you liked that one, didn't you? Right back, we've got... we'll leave that one open. It's probably, I reckon it'd be Gusto. I don't think they'll bring Reese in. You then got midfield three. We didn't actually decide. Are we going Enzo, Caicedo, Palmer? You happy with that? Okay, all right, we'll do that then. And then left wing, we didn't decide that either. We just started talking.
I think he's going to go Sancho, but there is a part of me that wants to go Nkunku, just to get Nkunku in the team. But there is also a part of me that thinks if Nkunku's going to be playing left wing, then I'm not really interested in it. You know,
He's wasted there, isn't he?
So if you're going to play a left winger, if that side of the team is being used as a left winger, then you might as well just play Sancho.
Okay, we'll stick Sancho in left wing. Right wing, we got Nonny. Number 10, you got Cole. And then up front, Nicholas Jackson. Up front for Chelsea. I'm happy with that team. I'm very happy with that team. So, you know, I think we'll have to see what happens now. Obviously, Dan and I will be watching the game intently. I'll be watching it over a barbecue because I'm not going. Oh, I say, hopefully I'll be watching it over a barbecue if the weather holds. That's the plan. It's my last one.
I don't think there's much barbecuing going on. I've already ditched my the shorts inside. I'm now full tracksuit bottoms because it's so cold.
See, I feel like, right, I'm the sort of guy when it's like, if it's like 15, 16, 17 like it is at the minute, I will stick on the jacket, I will stand outside and I will man it. I'll do it. Because I'm also doing it because I want to force it as my... It's like, at the building I'm at, there's a fantastic garden with some barbecues. Obviously, you've got the roof terrace with the barbecues and stuff as well. I don't have that at my new place. So I'm kind of
clinging on to summer. Like, the nails are scratching. Like, you're about to fall off the cliff. You know, you're like... You have to drain every bit of summer left.
It's the last one. I'm clinging on to it because I'm like, right, we're going to get this last one out of the way and it'll be done. And everyone wants to see me set fire to the barbecue again for some reason, which isn't my fault ever, by the way. It's the quality of barbecue and the quality of meat. So everyone can wind their bloody necks in. Have some of that.
That's a very clear lake of you, Louis. It's never your fault. It's the barbecue's fault.
Right, I'm not adding this from you because you've had my cooking and you know I can cook. So wind your neck in, child. How about that? So unlike Clear Lake, I'm going on the offensive. You can shove your PR brief in. Have that from me.
We're about 2 months away from Igboli doing a diss track on Bowley and everyone else.
I can't wait. Hey guys, this one goes out to Todd Bowley. Yeah. Pochettino, you were rubbish, but I got it done the Clear Lake way, figuring out, going to do my rhythms. I'm making it up as I go along. I'll figure it out. But aside from that, we'll move swiftly on. It's less hearing about my rubbish parody songs like a shitty Weird Al Yankovic, and let's hear about another person who is like a BTEC version of somebody else. Let's listen to what Enzo Maresca has to say in his press conference, because he's not Pep Guardiola.
Good afternoon.
You're a very adaptable manager. You have a rotational system, so players can play in different places. We've seen Enzo play as a deep line playmaker as a six and be excellent. We've seen him be box to box as an eight. Where do you see him playing best under you?
I think it's very, very difficult in the way we play to find a midfielder that he can attack like attacking midfielder and he can defend like all the midfielder. For instance, Arsenal is using Declan Rice, that is playing on the ball, attacking midfielder, and defend as a holding midfielder. City, in the past, they have done with Gundogan, that is attacking midfielder and defending like holding midfielder. In our case, we are trying to find a balance and to find a player that they can give us this kind of solution. And at the moment, Enzo is the only one that, when we have the ball, is playing like attacking midfielder, and off the ball, with when we don't have the ball, is dropping next to Moy and to try to help us and give us defensive balance.
How far off are Lavia and James from returning to
the bench? Yeah, Romeo looks like very close, hopefully for the next game. Unfortunately, Rhys needs more time.
Ben Chilwell is still here, so what is the situation with him?
Yeah, Ben now that probably is the only one that is still here. So probably now we're going to sit with him and we're going to find a solution because he's the only one. So we see probably he's going to be back with us on training session. We see, because at the moment he's not training with us. But from now on, probably we need to sit with him and to find the right solution, and we see. The reason why he's training apart is because the idea was for him to leave. But because we didn't find any solution, he's here. And probably he's going to start to train with us. We need to decide that. Probably it could be. Eh? And in the moment that if we decide that, we'll be one of the players.
How is Malo Custo doing? Is he all right? Is he ready for tomorrow?
No, Malo is still out. He's not available for tomorrow game.
And so, appreciate you don't want to talk too much about the ownership situation, but how important is it that it's not a negative distraction on the squad?
No, I think the players they are professional enough to understand that these kind of things there are things that we cannot do nothing, we cannot control. So the main focus for me is exactly the main focus for the players, that is to the pitch, the way we need to do the things to improve things, and I think this is the main target for them, for me, and for all of us, that we cannot control that kind of situation.
And do you hope whatever happens, it's resolved sooner rather than later, that it doesn't continue to drag on throughout the season?
I don't know if something is going to happen, to be honest. I don't have an idea. The only thing I can say is that in terms of football side, we are in the right direction. I think the team is improving, analyzing. I also use the international break to review the games and these kind of things. I think the three Premier League games that we played, it's true that we concede goals, but it's also true that we conceded the first shot on goal against Palace, that was the goal. Against City, we didn't concede so many chances, that it's very strange, don't concede chance against City. Wolves second half, we don't concede any shot. So I think we are in the right direction, and this is for me the most important thing and the thing that I can control.
Right, that's that. That is the presser over and done with all the big bits. Guys, that has been the Chelsea Echo. This has been your podcast ahead of Chelsea heading to Bournemouth at the Vitality, 8 o'clock kickoff. Final score with the score will be available after the show, so make sure you do tune in. We really appreciate everyone that has got involved with it so far. The score is always looking for more people to get involved and say things to him about the game. It'll be him, it'll be Red, it'll be Rambles. Dan, will you be sticking your head in for that maybe?
Have to see how the Crimson chin does.
Yeah, well, he's probably going to chin us. That's what worries me. Aside from that, this has been the Chelsea Echo. Make sure you give us a 5-star review. If we hit 55-star reviews, I will release the parody of I'm Still Standing from the perspective of Adolf Hitler. Not as funny as when I was 12 and we did a video at a movie camp where we did a satire of how Hitler really died, and we cast a fat ginger kid as Hitler. But you know, it is what it is. Game's the game. Enjoy it while you still can. This has been the Chelsea Echo. We'll see you later. Ta-da.